Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I am Stassi Okowski on this glorious August 3rd.
We are your storytelling hosts today. What else do you need to know? Our theme today is why silliness works. And you're guaranteed some laughs and maybe some wonder as we tell our stories.
Oh, that would be good.
This afternoon. So, Stash, do you have any updates?
Well,
I know you have one big update.
Yeah, what's that?
Speak.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it's not confirmed yet.
Well, I meant just Adam Booth.
Oh, Adam Booth on August the 11th at 7:30. People should go to speakstoryseries.com and register for the August 11th Speak Program. Adam Booth, the founder of Speak Story Series, and he is going to be the storyteller. And last year, when he performed in one of the months, it was one of the absolute best performances. And just a wonderful storyteller, great guy, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm supposed to be the MC. I'm not sure how that's going to work yet, but we still have time to figure it out. Because everybody's in their own place, you know, home and stuff.
Yeah.
And the what do you call that? The technology things have been crazy. We had to have a man from our technology provider come in this morning. We had no television at all last night, couldn't watch the news and all that stuff, and we couldn't get any help over the phone because something was wrong here. So we had a nice man came in this morning at 8 o'clock.
Do you have Antietam cable?
No, no.
Okay, that's all.
We have a really good, solid thing. The guy came in. He found out our box had been damaged. We did have a large lightning bolt a couple days ago, and he said he would replace it. So we got a whole new box and a new remote, you know. Anyway, the guy was really great, and he gave us some nice pointers about stuff, and it was very polite, and we were socially distanced, of course, masks and all that. So in August the 3rd is a special day in my life
because
Terry Lee and I were married on August the 3rd in
1998. Your wedding anniversary.
That's right. And it is wonderfully perfect this year because August the 3rd in 1998 was on a Monday.
Oh.
And you know how I like those things.
I know you do. That's a good deal.
Yeah, the universe works wonderfully. So today's storytelling is about silliness, right?
Yeah.
Why silliness works in stories.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good theme. Mr. Z.
I think I love it. It's wonderful because you can tell things in stories, even to very intelligent people. and they will, and you know, and it's wonderful because if people like, and people, all people like stories, even people who say, oh, that's for kids. They swap stories either in the tavern or at the restaurant or family reunions, and they talk about Uncle Fanous and Grandpa and all that stuff. They're storytellers also. So, but if you go to a place like Jonesboro or to places where we go, where there are groups of people listening to stories and where we've performed, you can say some of the most, with the word, I would say, inane things in the story. And, you know, people will be laughing.
So we're going to do that today, right? We're going to be inane.
Well, in a sense.
That's my plan.
Yes. Okay, so you have a story?
I do. Are you ready for a story, or are you going to do any more announcements? Do those later.
Announcements later. We're already 5 minutes in.
Okay. Oh, thank you for saying that, because I hadn't started my timer yet.
Oh.
Okay. All right, so this is a brand new story. Finished this morning at 10 a.m. So,
wow.
Yeah, so you have to tell me if it works. We'll do feedback afterwards if there's time, okay?
Yes. I'm going to mute myself right now.
Okay. This is called Mr. Silly and Granny Grimm. Once upon a time, there was a little old woman and a little old man who lived in a little old town on the side of a little old hill. They'd lived there for a long time, ever since the little old fellow was a big young man and the little old lady was a big young woman. They'd known each other all through their big young days and far into their little old years. These two were born with the names William Waddle Aloysius Bliss and Arabella Isabella Mimsy Grimm. But nobody in the little old town on the side of the little old hill ever called them that, at least not out loud. Most people called them Bill and Mimsy. When they were a big young man and a big young woman, Bill and Mimsy lived right next door to each other on Mulberry Street. Bill lived in the first house on Mulberry Street with his many brothers and sisters. Mimsy lived in the second house along Mulberry Street with her parents and her almost twin sister, Iris Irene Eileen Grimm. Everybody called her Reenie Leenie. And their little brother, Hank. When Mimsy's brother was just a toddler, she sometimes had to take care of him after school while their mom went to work. Mimsy propped Hank up with pillows and gave him a pile of little golden books to read or to look at so Mimsy could do her homework. But Hank whined and fussed, so Bill came over to help. He told Hank made-up stories about an imaginary elephant named Wilbur who loved peanuts more than anything in the world. Mimsy said, "That's just silly, Bill." But Hank laughed and laughed when Bill impersonated a trumpeting, snuffling, hungry elephant. And Mimsy and Bill both got their homeworks done. When Mimsy and Bill were high school age and Hank was a troublemaking whippersnapper, Hank went away to overnight camp for the summer. Mimsy told Bill that Hank was homesick so far away from home and she was worried about him. So Bill mailed Hank a big bag of peanuts sealed in a manila envelope in case he happened to run into Wilbur, the imaginary elephant, at camp. Those peanuts got squished in the stamp-canceling machine at the post office, and everything there got all gummed up. So by the time Hank got his peanuts, they were nothing but a big, greasy mess of peanut butter. Of course, the post office found Bill's return address on the outside of the greasy envelope, and they wrote him a letter of their own. "Dear Bill, never, ever, ever again send peanuts through the post office in a manila envelope, or else." Bill said it was an unnecessarily threatening letter. After all, he hadn't intended to gum everything up. Mimsy said, "Oh, that's just silly, Bill." But Hank, full chortled with glee every time he told that story. Mimsy had plans to marry the boy who lived in the third house along Mulberry Street. His name was Bob, and he liked Mimsy very much. Mimsy told her sister, Reenie Leenie, that Bob was very handsome, but more important to Mimsy was how hard Bob worked He had a paper route and a job washing dishes at the ice cream shop downtown. Mimsy told Reenie Leenie Bob would make a fine husband and father. She never did marry Bob, though. He'd stop to visit her every morning after his paper route and every day after school on his way to the ice cream shop, because he said he needed her hugs. But he was late to work once too often. Well, twice too often. He got fired from both jobs. And Mimsy hadn't been all that fond of his hugs anyway. I hear that Reenie Leenie moved away and reconnected with Bob many years later, and they got married. Bill intended to marry a girl who lived around the corner from him. Her name was Priscilla. He loved the way she always called him Curly, in spite of the fact that Bill had kept his head shaved since he was in junior high school. He never did marry Priscilla. She went off and joined the Peace Corps and was almost never heard from again, at least not in their little old town on the side of a little old hill. But there was a rumor that Priscilla and Hank eloped from the Peace Corps together and are living happily someplace south of the Antarctic Circle. In the meantime, Mimsy and Bill finally finished all their homework and graduated from high school. Bill found a job in the bakery behind the ice cream shop downtown. Mimsy started what she called a little farm market, filling her garden with broccoli, green beans, spinach, tomatoes, corn, carrots, and green, yellow, and red vegetables of all kinds, so that she and all her customers would live long and healthy lives. Bill bought, cooked, and ate a lot of Mimsy's broccoli and her other vegetables. After dinner, he often invited her down to the ice cream shop and bakery for a little dessert. Mimsy often hesitated because, you know, ice cream can be too much of a good thing. But Bill was persistent and didn't insist on hugs, so Mimsy smiled and ordered a small vanilla cone. Then Mimsy found she was putting on a few pounds, so she decided to walk 3 miles each morning before she began her day's work at the little farm market. Bill began walking with her whenever he could get a morning break at the bakery, and every day as they started their walk, he bestowed upon Mimsy a fresh-baked, still-warm-from-the-oven giant cookie, as big as her hand. In fact, he called them two-hand cookies, because even if your hands were as large and capable as Mimsy's, you still needed both of them to eat that cookie. Each morning, Mimsy hesitated, because, you know, cookies can be too much of a good thing. And then she'd smile at Bill and sigh and bite into that cookie. Just one bite, though, saving the rest for later. Sometimes in the middle of the day, Bill stopped at the farm market on his lunch break from work. On a typical day, Mimsy would say, "Bill, would you like to join me for a bowl of that delicious soup you brought yesterday? There's just enough left for two bowls." And of course, he said yes. And while Mimsy reheated the soup, Bill set the table with the ham, succotash, and cornbread he made early that morning, especially for this day's lunch, along with the reheated soup as appetizer. And Mimsy gasped when she saw the groaning table and said, "Oh, Bill, how silly to make so much food for just the two of us." But she couldn't help smiling as she filled her plate. And when they had eaten all they could, she wrapped up the leftovers for another meal. One afternoon, Bill came by with a big plate of big brown cookies sprinkled with powdered sugar. He offered the plate to Mimsy, but she hesitated because, you know, cookies can be, yeah. She sighed to herself, thanked him, and picked up one of those yummy-looking cookies. She closed her eyes, opened her mouth wide, and bit down with a loud crack that sounded like teeth hitting a piece of masonite. Bill opened his mouth wide in a big grin. Mimsy looked at the cookie, and she looked at Bill. Mimsy sat back and examined the cookie carefully. It wasn't a real cookie after all. There had been workmen at the bakery installing new ventilator pipes, and when they cut holes through the old paneling, they cut big, round, chocolate-looking, cookie-shaped circles. Bill thought he could fool somebody with those circles, so he sprinkled them with powdered sugar and offered them round to all his coworkers, who fell for the joke, and took the Masonite cookies round to other people till almost everyone in the little old town on the side of the little old hill had experienced Bill's prank for themselves. When she heard the whole story, Mimsy said, "Well, I hope no one broke a tooth." But then she smiled and said, "Oh, that's just so silly, Bill. How in the world do you think of these things?" You can see where this story's going. Bill and Mimsy did get married, and while they may not have lived completely happily ever after, they did grow up and into that little old woman and the little old man that began this story. They had a couple children of their own, and those children had children, and those children had more. Bill read to them from little golden books and sometimes told them stories he made up all by himself. They took the local paper every day so Bill could read the funny papers out loud to Mimsy. She read the news and reported it to Bill. On Sundays, they had the D.C. Tatler Post delivered to their front porch so Mimsy could do the crossword and cut out recipes for Bill to use up the extra green and yellow and red vegetables from the farm market. Bill made tomato cakes once for everyone on Mulberry Street from one of those recipes, and kale cookies regularly for Mimsy. Mimsy taught the children and grands and great-grands the Greek alphabet. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa, lambda, nu, xi, omicron, pi, rho, sigma, tau, epsilon, phi, chi, psi, omega. So they would have a good classical education and do well at crosswords. She made them memorize the names and zip codes of the state capitals so they could explore this great country and never lose their way. Bill sent their children's refrigerator art and hand-drawn funny cartoons to all their family, friends, and relations as Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Solstice cards, and Mimsy saw to it they all wrote their thank you notes in a timely fashion. Bill took care of the false mustaches and wax lips at Halloween, and Mimsy saw to the haircuts the rest of the year. By the time they became the little old woman and little old man of Mulberry Street, their children, grands, great-grands, and most all the people in the little old town on the side of the little old hill called them Mr. Silly and Granny Grim, which mostly made them smile. Sometimes one or the other of them said, "Well, that's just silly."
Very silly. Correct.
Too silly?
No. I think this is important,
okay.
Except people might think it was part of it done on purpose. The Greek alphabet, there were some things you didn't say correctly.
I even looked them up, but tell me what I
did. You look them up and listen to them?
I tried very hard. I couldn't find anybody to give me an audio. They were, you know how in the dictionary they give you how to pronounce a word?
All you do is go one. Okay.
I mean, I know how to do it. I look at things up how to pronounce all the time, but I couldn't get the Greek alphabet to be audio.
If you do Google, just Google, don't look up the Greek alphabet in a dictionary or anything. Just Google and type in any one of those. It should come up.
But then I would have to do 26. I wanted 24. I wanted them all in one list.
Oh, yeah. Well.
And I couldn't get that to happen.
No. Did you
so
get
tell
any?
Me which, yeah, no. Not in a list. I didn't
okay,
try one.
Okay.
The only one I tried was Theta.
Who?
I tried Theta. Theta. Because I've been pronouncing it theta, but that's not what. Well, I will look it up again.
It's theta.
Okay. My mother taught me the Greek alphabet.
I know.
When I was a kid, but okay. I don't remember it anymore.
It's also zeta.
Okay.
So anyway, I think somebody like me, you know.
Well, I want to get it right. Absolutely.
Right. So, well, it would only take you 25 minutes to do it the other way. And I know 25 minutes out of your life.
I'm not spending 25 minutes, but I take your word for it.
Yes. Anyway, if I can find it in a easier way, I'll send it to you. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So anyway, I like the story. I thought it was, I thought it showed the point in a number of ways. The names were bizarre.
annoyingly bizarre.
No, I look forward to the time you stand in front of an audience and you do that with from, you know, memory. I know it's a brand new thing, but
right.
I want to hear all those words. I thought it was funny. And you won't believe this. I took notes on the whole story.
You did?
Not critique, but took notes. Yeah, I have Bill and Mimsy and things about Bill. Has he put peanuts in a bag? And that was really silly because you can't crush peanuts and make peanut butter.
Happened to me.
But it didn't become peanut butter.
It did. I got it in the mail, and it was peanut butter. It was crunchy peanut butter, but it was peanut butter.
How?
Because it had gotten smelled. Well, I don't know how, but I assume it was because it went through the canceling machine.
No, it was because somebody sent you peanut butter.
No, nobody did send me peanut butter. My dad sent me a package of peanuts. It was a cellophane-wrapped package of peanuts wrapped in foil
inside
a plastic bag.
Yeah, and your dad is as silly as you. He did that on purpose.
What do you mean he did it on purpose?
Peanut butter is not made by crushing peanuts.
Yes, it is.
No, it's made by crushing peanuts and putting it together with some whip and with some stirring and with some, you know, mix. It's not just crush a peanut.
I used to make peanut butter at the health food store that I worked at in Chicago. They had a grinder. You put in the peanuts. If you wanted it smooth, if you wanted it runny, you had to put oil in. But if you just wanted thick crushed peanuts that was peanut butter, you could just send them through the grinder. I don't know why you're laughing so hard. We ate it all the time.
Because you said if you wanted thick crushed peanuts, that's what you get, thick crushed peanuts.
If you wanted thick crushed peanut butter, if you didn't want it runny, if you wanted it to be really spreadable, you had to add oil. I'm not disagreeing with the fact that peanut butter has oil in it. But I used to make peanut butter, and I ate it as peanut butter, and we sold it as peanut butter.
And that's okay.
It wasn't spreadable.
I love it. It just goes along with the story because there is no such thing as peanut butter that's made out of just crushed peanuts. Because it would be just a dry thing. It'd be like, you know.
It's not dry, though, because the oil separates. Once it's crushed, the oil separates from the peanuts. I wish I had saved that package. I did save it for a couple years because it was such a cool thing to me. But it was I don't know if there was planners or not.
Okay.
But it was a little cellophane package of peanuts wrapped in foil, and there was oil everywhere through the leather.
Because somebody put oil in it.
There was no added oil in it. Peanuts have oil in them.
Okay.
Where do you think you get peanut oil?
Oh, I don't know.
You get it from peanuts.
Okay. Now I have to do some science this afternoon. I have peanuts. I'm going to crush some peanuts and see if they get oily.
Okay. I've done it. I know it works.
I admit that I'm probably wrong.
I just find it astonishing that without having done it, that you would argue with me about it.
Well, I've crushed peanuts before and they never became oily. Maybe I have non-oily peanuts.
That could be.
Okay.
They could have been old peanuts. But old dried up peanuts have oil in them.
Okay. Well, I have to investigate.
Okay. You investigate.
But you know
what? And I will, when you're finished, bring it to me and I'll eat it on a cracker. and call it peanut butter.
Okay. How do you know I won't cheat?
I don't really care. I am blown away by the fact that you argue with me on the air.
You were supposed to say, I know you would never cheat.
I know you would never cheat.
Thanks. I think you're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour.
At a particularly unenlightened moment.
Enlightened. With this supposed to be silly.
It is silly, but it's unenlightened.
Okay. I think you missed the point of my jibe. Anyway.
I was to understand that it was all a joke?
That it was silly. The discussion itself is silly.
So who do you think silly. I am in that story?
In that story?
In that story I just told. Who am I?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm not in the story.
No.
My name. But the person that I come closest to is Mimsy, who's my mother.
Yeah, of course.
So in most situations where there's a silly person and a non-silly person, I'm the non-silly person. And especially if you challenge my chops, if you tell me I don't know how to make peanut butter, my blood pressure goes up.
And
I've been making peanut butter since I was in college.
Okay.
You're speechless.
No, I'm just thinking the next time I come to your house, I want to see you make peanut butter.
Okay. I don't have a grinder, but I can. But I can use. I have a mallet that I use to crush garbanzo beans and other nuts. So I can certainly crush peanuts.
Okay.
I might even bring you some.
Oh, don't bring me some. That wouldn't be any proof.
Maybe I should say that if your total experience with peanuts comes from a plastic jar bought at the supermarket, I can see why you would believe. There's no oil in peanuts.
I used to buy peanuts all the time.
How did you buy them?
By the bag.
In the shell?
Yes.
Do you know how old they were? Because the peanuts that we used to buy to make peanut butter at the health food store, the whole bag was oily. I mean, the peanuts had more oil in them than the stuff that comes out of the plastic jar in the grocery store. They hadn't been roasted. They were raw peanuts.
Yeah.
You think I'm hedging, don't you?
No, I think you're just saying what I believe about peanuts. If you put them in fresh peanuts, they probably have oil.
Yeah, all peanuts have oil in them, but the fresh ones, the raw ones have more oil.
Yeah, but if they're old, they don't have oil?
They don't have as much oil as if they're
but
fresh.
But even old ones, like old as me, would have oil?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
I don't remember the percentage of fat, but it's high.
Okay.
Desiccated peanuts.
All right, good. I think if people listen to this, they're going to say, this has gotten to be really silly.
Yeah. Okay, do you have any more feedback for me?
I just
redeem ourselves.
I liked the whole thing. I really did. I liked all the names. I liked the fact about the threatening letter from the post office for sending peanut butter or peanuts through the mail. That I truly thought you were being silly because the post office doesn't have a machine that pounds things.
Well, they used to. When I was a kid, they did. There was a I worked in the post office. There was a canceling machine.
Yeah.
And there were lots of letters they didn't put through there because you used to have to mark them fragile, or if there was something fat in them, they would.
Did they go up and down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, or
no,
did they go once?
Each letter went once.
Once. So, okay, that goes along with the silliness. Because one stamp. Because I know they didn't have a machine that would, crush them. It would stamp them.
Most of the story, the whole story, came from little bits and pieces of my family. But that piece I got the thing in the mail.
Okay. And so you made up about the stamping thing, but they don't have a machine that pounds them. And the only reason I know about any post offices, my gorgeous, wonderful 82-year-old brother was a mailman for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I often spent time with him when I drove him to work for various reasons and saw what he did and things like that. And I know they canceled them. They were gently canceled. But it's still funny because it's silly.
Well,
it gives the impression of a
crusher. I also
worked
at the post office. And I can tell you that just because things were supposed to work a certain way was almost a guarantee that some percentage of the time, sometimes a large percentage of the time, things did not go the way they were supposed to. Packages that said fragile, for example. I had coworkers who played soccer with those
sure.
packages.
Right.
So
I understand that.
The idea that nothing ever went through. So if a postal employee was annoyed at a package, you could not predict what was going to happen to it.
Right. So he might put it in that.
In the canceling machine 75
canceling
times.
Machine, right. There you go.
I Good. Rest my case.
your case.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg is rising up in her hospital bed and giving me a high five.
Yeah. your case is on legs that are even wobblier than hers. Okay. Names, let's see. There was something else in there. Oh, I like the cookies made out of tomatoes and kale.
Yeah.
That's a nice pretty touch, silly,
don't you
too.
Think? Oh, actually, I have a recipe for tomato cake that I
don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all. And I you know, I should have realized when I started this thing about the peanut butter that you are an experienced person with very strange things in your life. So, and it's true. I mean, that's complimentary. You know?
Oh.
Well, it is. You know, you have some experiences that.
We're on the radio, and they can't see your face.
Odysseus would be jealous of some of your experiences. You know, he could have put him in Iliad.
Yeah, I'm not so jealous of Odysseus, but that's okay.
Well, you shouldn't be. You know, you have had better adventures. Your family is as famous as Odysseus's family. So, but anyway, I need
in
to take
West
a drink.
In West Philadelphia, that's true.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your feedback, except for the insulting parts.
There were no insulting parts. There might have been if we are doing with salting peanuts, but not no insulting parts. You just make up things sometimes. Okay, so.
I'm a storyteller.
You didn't have to tell me that. We're on the air doing the story. I'm going to do a story.
Okay. It's about time.
I know.
You didn't happen to time my story, did you?
Oh, no, it's about 11 minutes.
I think it was 14 minutes. You think it was 11 minutes?
I'm guessing it was about 11. If you said 14, it was probably 17.
Okay, then.
Notice the 3 minutes. I would say 14 plus or minus 3. How's that?
Okay. Well, it definitely wasn't minus 3. We can both agree on that.
Well, I was trying... You know, I'm always trying to be nice.
Except when you're insulting my peanut butter.
My goodness. <It's> just...
Do they have peanut butter ice cream at Nutter's?
I wouldn't bet on it, but I believe I have seen something with peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just asking.
Yeah. And I have just made a note to myself to ask Terry about the peanut... sauce that she's been making recently that she put on one of our dinners a couple
times.
I make
peanut sauce.
Yeah. I bet you use peanuts to do that.
I use peanut butter, actually.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Terry uses peanut butter, too, because we don't have any peanuts. We have dry roasted
peanuts. You don't even have any peanuts in your house in your
argument. No, we have dry roasted peanuts, you know, that you get in the jar.
Okay.
You know.
But not the greasy kind.
No, we don't. I've never allowed greasy peanuts around me. They scare me.
No wonder you don't know anything about peanuts.
That's true. Okay. Are you?
I'm ready for another story. Yes. Do you want to critique, Sash?
Sure. And are you going to mute yourself?
Yeah, because I'm laughing too hard.
I'm afraid of. That's okay. Okay, this is a Jack tale. All right, and it's called Jack and the King's Girl. Jack had an uncle that lived a right smart distance from where he and his mother lived, and he decided one time he'd like to go up and see his uncle. Jack had got so he wasn't lazy no more, not so much as he used to be. So he worked hard all week getting in wood and fixing everything up around the place, and then he pulled out. He had to go right by the king's house on the way to his uncle's. The king had an awful pretty girl, but all her life she never had laughed. And the king had put out an advertisement that anybody could make her laugh could marry her. Well, Jack got down close to where the king lived, and there was a girl on the porch, and she said, "Hey, Jack, where are you going?" And he explained he was going up to see his uncle. And she said, "I hope you have a good time." So Jack went on. Anytime Jack had passed the king's house, he would stop if the girl was out, and they would have a conversation. They never did any flirting, but maybe their flirting was in their conversation, you know. Anyway, Jack went on and found his uncle, and his uncle was so pleased to see him. Jack loved his uncle very much, and they would spend good time together. He would help his uncle do things around his place, but then sometimes they would get together with some of the people in the neighborhood, and they would make music, and he would forget all about going back home to see his mother. And sometimes he would stay there for a while. So every once in a while, his uncle said, "Jack, you know, your mother will be getting uneasy about this, so you better plan on going back home. She'll need things done around the house." So Jack said, "Yes, I guess I had better go pretty soon." And his uncle said, "Well, here, I'm going to give you something. I appreciate you coming and helping me out. So I'm going to give you this nice needle, nice metal needle, you know, and some thread for it." And he said, "You take that home and you could practice and learn how to do a little bit of sewing and fix your own, you know, clothes in case you got a tear in your pants or something, in your shirt." So Jack took that needle and he wasn't sure exactly what to do with it. He just put the thread through the eye of the needle, and it was pretty long thread, and he threw it over his shoulder and tied the end of the thread to a button, and that needle was hanging behind him. So he's going on down the road, and he passed the king's house, and there was the girl. She said, "You getting back, are you, Jack?" And he said, "Yep, I had an awful good time." What's that you got over your shoulder?" And he said, "Oh, it's a nice needle that my uncle gave me, and I'm taking it back home to mother. She's going to show me how to use needle and fix my clothes." "Lord me, Jack. I never did see a man tote a needle that way. You ought to stick it. See the pocket in the front of your shirt? You should take that needle and put it in one side and out the other side and just leave it sit there, and then you wouldn't have to hold on to that string." "Oh, okay." So Jack said, "Maybe next time I'll try something like that." So he got home to his mother, gave her the needle, and she promised she would show him how to use it. Jack worked real hard, got things all fixed up, but he said, "I'd like to go back and see my uncle again." She said, "Well, get me enough firewood in for the time you're going to be gone, and you can go ahead." So he did. And he got up to he walked by the king's house and said, "Oh, Jack, where you started this time?" "Oh, I'm just going to go up see my uncle again." And she told him, "Hope you have a good time, and maybe he'll give you another present." Well, Jack went up, saw his uncle, and they did all kind of things together. And Jack had such a good time hearing fiddle music and banjo picking, and he never thought about going back home for a while. Finally, his uncle said, "Jack, you've been here a good while. I think you should go home now. Make sure your mom's all right. She get, you know. And he said, I think I've got something for you, Jack. He went into one of his closets and brought this sword out. And his sword was kind of rusty, but it was pointy. And he said, Jack, my great-grandfather had used this in the Revolutionary War, and I'm going to give it to you. So Jack took that sword, and he started off back home. And he remembered what the girl had told him the last time he went by there. So he took that sword, and he shoved it right through the shirt on the right side of his shirt and pushed it across, and the point came out the left side of his shirt. And he, as he went on down the road, it looked kind of funny because that sword was pretty heavy and sort of tore his shirt up a bit. So he got down by the king's house, and there was the girl. And she came out and said, "Hi, Jack." And looked at him and said, "What do you have there?" And he said, "Oh, this is a sword my uncle gave me, and I'm going to take it home." And she said, "Well, you plumb drawer in your shirt. You ought to carry that over your shoulder." And Jack said, "Well, next time I'll know better." And he went on home, spent time with his mother, did a lot of work around the place. His mother was always pleased. He got a lot of firewood in for her and everything. After about a week and a half, he decided he wanted to go see his uncle again. So his mother said, "Go ahead, just be good, behave yourself." Well, as he was on his way to his uncle's, he passed the girl at the king's gate, and they talked for a little while. He got up to his uncle's house finally. There were a lot of young folks up there, and they got to making music and singing old songs, stayed till nearly daylight. Then him and his uncle, they got some other place the next night, did till finally, "It's about time you went back home, Jack." And he said, "Yeah, I reckon it is." So he said, "I got something else for you, Jack. So here, I'm going to tell you, I got this young colt, and I want you to take it. And you can use it, you can help raise it, and your mom will be appreciative of that." So he took the colt, and he remembered as he got near the king's house that the girl had told him he should carry stuff over his shoulder. So he had a hard time getting it up, but he finally got that colt on top of his shoulders. And when the king's girl saw him coming, she ran out to the fence and said, "Jack, you're the awfulest fool I ever did see. What are you doing with that? You ought to be riding." Jack said, "Well, I'll try to think of that next time." And he went on home, and his mother was real pleased. And he spent a lot of time with the colt, trying to teach things and everything. Finally, he said to his mother, "I'm anxious to see my uncle again. I'm going to get everything set here for you, and then I'm going to go back see uncle, okay?" She said, "Sure, Jack." You know, his mother was very easygoing on him. I think that's helped Jack get in some of the troubles he gets in. So he got all his work done, and then he was all on his way. Girl was out in the yard as he passed, and Jack talked with her for a while, but then he went on to his uncle's. They worked around the place a little, went hunting a time or two, and every night some young folks would come there, and Jack and get to frolicking with them, and they made music and got to playing Weevily Weep and Skip to My Lou and doing eight-handed reels, and it was so much fun. They did that for a number of days. After working all day, they would play all night, and then finally Jack said, "Well, I think I better go home again." The uncle said, "Jack, I'm going to give you a good milk cow. You take this home." And so he remembered when the girl told him the last time, and he was carrying that colt, that she said, "You should be riding an animal like that, not carrying." So sure enough, he got down to the king's house. He saw that girl out there washing. Jack remembered, and he went to jump on the back of that heifer that he had been given, and started. Trouble is, when he jumped on the heifer's back, he did it the opposite way that he should have. And the heifer started running and jumping up and down, and Jack had only the tail to hang on to. And when he got down by the king's house, the girl was out by the road, and she saw that Jack holding on to the tail of this heifer, and heifer running and jumping and bucking and everything. And she burst out laughing. That was the first time in her whole life she had ever laughed. And the king had promised if somebody could make his daughter laugh, he would marry them. He'd get them married. So anyway, the king came out, and when he saw Jack and that calf, he started laughing too. Finally, somebody caught the heifer and helped Jack to get off. The old king took Jack over in town and bought him a new set of clothes. Then he hitched up two fine horses and a buggy, rode Jack and his girl over to the big church and had them married. The girl went home with Jack, of course, since they were married, and the last time I stopped by there, they were doing right well. Jack's mother was very proud of them. So, what do you think?
I think that's wonderful. Is that a Ray Hicks version?
No, this comes from a book by Richard Chase, which was put together back in the early part of the 1900s, and it's based on tales that someone else collected back in the 1800s from their grandparents. And you know, there are a number of versions of this I've seen. And in some, there he gets to do other things. It reminds me of Epaminondas, which was a story about a boy going to the store to get stuff, and he always did the wrong thing with the stuff. You know, one of the things he did was pour milk in a pocket because he didn't use his pocket the first time. Next time he got milk, and anyway, but the thing is, which is neat, and which I didn't do, and I will do. I am going to use this on August 4th. I'm going to be telling stories at Best Friends by Zoom, with a group in Pennsylvania, and then on August 12th for the Washington County Public Library System, I'm going to be doing a program about Jack and the Beanstalk and Jack Tales and the Jack Tales Wall. I'm going to include this one. And by then, I am hoping in the next few days to learn what Weebly Wheat is. It is a wonderful story, which my wife knew of. It's a story, Weebly Wheat and Skip the Maloo. Skip the Maloo, I know that from childhood, or I recognize it. But Weebly Wheat has to do with wheat and baking and stuff like that. And it's got a nice tune to it, but I didn't want to try. But when I do this in the performance, I am going to have that tune and sing the song.
Wow.
And the song is funny. So anyway.
You're going to play it on the accordion.
No. I don't think I'm going to be using my accordion for a while because I have a doctor's appointment this afternoon for something that's, I think I may have told you about, I don't know. Can you see that finger?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
See how it's a trigger finger.
Yeah.
And this is the, I'm poor me, you know, this is probably the worst one I've had. And this is number 5, I believe. Might even be 6. I've had surgery 3 times on my hands for trigger fingers. Never heard of it in my whole life until I lived in Arkansas. Got in Arkansas and it happened to me. I couldn't believe it.
Is it contagious?
No. Well, apparently, though, it's something wrong with my hands that it happens. And so I have an appointment with the doctor today. And I'm hoping that she'll examine me. And it happens sometimes spontaneously. And when it goes into place like this, the truth is it is very irritating and painful. It's like a quick shock.
Mm-hmm.
So and then sometimes I can work it out, you know, and right. open it. And sometimes it just comes up, it'll just ease off by itself. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I've had the surgery on my hands, and it's not a big deal. It just has to be bandaged a little bit and everything to cut things open in your palm. So I'm hoping that she'll give me a referral to a hand surgeon.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry to hear all that.
Yeah. And it may be, I don't know, maybe playing the accordion might aggravate it because I use that finger a lot.
Yeah. So how are you going to play it if you're not going to play the accordion?
I'm going to sing it a cappella.
Oh, I thought you said you were going to play it.
Oh, okay. No. I might have said that. I've been so mixed up today ever since that peanut butter fiasco that, I'm just,
You just need a little crunchy peanut butter. You'll be fine. Just rub it on that finger.
Right. Warm it up. Maybe warm it up some.
Yeah, there you go. Put it on a slice of bread. You'll be fine.
Just like a hot dog, right?
There you go.
Hot dog. Anyway.
What time do you have, Stosh?
We've been doing this for 49 minutes, 50 minutes, just turned 50 minutes. You got so upset about the peanut butter thing, you turned off your clock.
I did. Well, I can't wait to hear Weevily Wheat. You have me totally intrigued.
It's really cute. It is a really cute, and it's simple rhyme, mm-hmm. you know. And I think I could do it even if I don't learn the music. I can... Terry can show me the music mm-hmm. easily, mm-hmm. or I can just make up a tune, you know. So okay. Anyway, but that's neat. I was fascinated when I came across that in the story.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, that's good, because I had a really nice comment from Kevin Cordy about my performance with the accordion and when I did Miskite, that he thought that was... Yeah, he really thought that was wonderful to, play something, music on the accordion, and then to do a song that I had a recording of just the music that mm-hmm. Terry had made me a recording, so I could sing with the music. And, he said he thought that was a wonderful way for somebody to perform if they enjoy doing that, to a little singing, tell a story, a little music, and mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I've missed lately, well actually for years now, from Adam. The first two times I saw Adam, he played his banjo and played the piano,
mm-hmm.
and I have said to him a couple times, that I just thought that was missing in his performances lately. Not missing. It was just something that I missed, because his performances are always really wonderful. But I thought that was, if I was a person who could influence him, I would make him do it. However, I'm not the king. And just so so I love the stories about Jack and the king, because there are so many kings that he comes across.
Yes.
He marries an incredible number of girls.
He does.
And he also...
Jack is famous for that.
I know. And sometimes he doesn't marry the girl. He said, no, thank you.
Sometimes it's better that he doesn't.
Right. Yeah. Well. Anyway, we only have a few minutes. Go ahead.
Well, you said you had still had a couple announcements.
Well,
a couple of dates you were going to share.
August 4th. People wouldn't be able to get on that because I have to sign into that. That day, that's for the group and best friends in Pittsburgh, in mm-hmm. outside of Pittsburgh. I think it's in Beaver Falls.
But the 11th and the 12th.
The 11th is Adam Booth. People can get into that by going to speakstoryseries.com and register. And if you're a person like you and me and your husband and my wife, we are season ticket holders. So we can just register.
La-di-da.
Yeah, well, it's important for the Speak Story series.
It's important to me.
Yeah. And otherwise, it costs $12. And people can pay with a credit card now. Mm-hmm. We have that set up. And people can send in a check. And then on August 12th at 11 a.m., I'll be performing for the Washington County Public Library System. People can find out how to get in that by contacting the Washington County Public Library System. And as soon as they send me the link, I will put it on my Facebook pages and things. So, and that's really nice. I enjoyed last summer performing at 8 libraries in the county. And this summer I'm doing only 3 shows, and that's because of the nasty virus that's going around, or COVID-19 and all that stuff. So that makes me tired. I've been up the day very early. I usually don't get up at 7:30 in the morning, you know, but I had to get up in waiting for the man from the television people, who was very nice. And I like it when people really know their job very well. He was here about maybe 3 minutes or so and said, "Your box is bad." You know, the recorder and thing that attaches to the TV. So it's the modern world is amazing. I'm sitting here looking at, I have a TV, I have a TV box, I have a video player, DVD player, I have headphones, I have some kind of thing where the signals come in, connected to a cable, and next to that, we have a printer. And that is all on one piece of furniture. And the first TV I ever saw in my life was just a small box. And all you did was turn the dial, and it was nice, a round picture, and there was nothing else. Oh, no, that's not true. There were rabbit ears, you know. There were rabbit ears sitting on top of it, and that's amazing.
A round TV. It's been a
while. Yeah, the screen was round.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that first TV, and we didn't have that very long. Shortly after that, my sister bought a TV for my parents, and then it was a rectangle, and it was about as big as my iPad.
we had a square one about the same size, but it was in a huge console.
Yeah.
Console was right. Almost as tall as I was, but yeah. A tiny little screen.
Yeah. Over the years, we had, by the time I was in my senior year in high school, right before I went in the Army, my father worked for the gas and electric company in Baltimore, and they had a store where they sold appliances and stuff like that.
Huh.
And being an employee of the company, their employees got a break on prices and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you could buy things on time and all that stuff. And so my dad treated himself to a really nice TV. And it had color, which was really something.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Oh, boy, it's a big deal. And one of my favorite things to do in teaching in chemistry was to use a black and white TV and show the kids how I could make people's faces get twisted with a magnet, because the TV works on shooting electrons at the screen, the old TVs. The mm-hmm. ones now that we have, these flat ones, I have no idea how they get the pictures in there. I believe it's magic.
They use a funnel.
The old TVs, you had to have something sitting 2 feet from the wall because the back end of it had the electron gun in it. Mm-hmm. And the new ones, you can hang it on the wall. So I think we're out of time.
I think we are. But it was fun.
It was fun. And I enjoyed, you know, if anybody listens to the show, I think they would get the idea, the silliness.
Oh, I think so. We got
because
pretty silly.
We did get silly, but we kept it sane, I think. Right?
Well, more or less. Yeah. Okay. This is Fanny Crawford and
Stas Ziolkowski.
Your hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. Closing out this week's show, the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community, that's you, beloved listeners, to share, preserve, and expand all our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for...
Oh, we got a plethora of science fiction stories. I found an audio version of Darwin's Radio, the story I was telling you about